and final installation of our series in David and Bathsheba. And then, of course, we have the transition already this evening to the tragedies that we already spoke about last week, that the cherev will always be in David's house, the sword for the cherev that he brought on Uriah, and the sin of bloodshed, and the other midah keneged midah, the other sin, measure for a measure, that David committing by taking, of course, the wife of another man, and David is told that that would happen to him, that will happen with his own son, Avshalom, as we'll talk about, and the fact that his own household will suffer so much, David, that is obviously measure for measure with respect to what he did to the house of Uriah. And so we'll begin to see that process this evening. So where we left off was David, to his credit, after he is confronted by Natan HaNavi, he utters two simple words. I've sinned unto God. Chatasi l'Hashem. And before telling him of all the things that I just reviewed, of the terrible fate and penalties that await him, Natan HaNavi reassures David and says, Gam Hashem havir chatas chalos amos. That in the end, you will come out on the other side. There's going to be a lot between here and there, between now and then. But there's a path forward. There's a path forward. There are people that can own up to failure, to shortcoming. And that is something, as we said, that David HaMelech came by honestly. That was a very important point of contrast, as we discussed last week with Shaul. And it goes back to Yehuda, the progenitor of the line of monarchy himself. Tzadka mimeni. When he owns up to his own sin, in terms of keeping Tamar effectively an aguna, a chained woman, ki al kein lo nisatia l'sheila v'ni. And so that is where we will pick things up. So the Navi tells us, sorry, okay, Ephes, says Natan HaNavi to David. Ephes, the Ramban explains, means that everything that preceded this is overshadowed. And so when the Meraglim say, Ephes, ki az ha'am, the nation, the indigenous peoples of Canaan are simply too strong for us, we cannot break through and enter the land, Ephes. So Natan HaNavi says to David, ki ni'etz ni'atztes oyvei Hashem. Badavar hazeh, you've committed a terrible chilul Hashem, you've desecrated God's name. When people see that you, David, you who spent so much time speaking about the righteous path, that you've done something so awful, so wrong, right? So what it does is it causes cynicism. It causes cynicism. It's a chilul Hashem because people see, oh, yeah, the righteous one, right, who was, you know, always the spokesperson, the face of morality, of virtue. If you behave this way, so what does that do to the people who have been mocking that? The people, so at least as there was one virtuous person, especially in the capacity of Melech. How many times have we referenced the words of the Rambam, Libo hu lev kol akal, that the heart of the king is the heart of the nation. Right, as the nation goes, as the king goes, so does the nation. So when people who hold themselves out as purveyors of virtue, when they fail, there's enormous collateral damage. Let me give you an analogy. So the United States, and I say this in a very good way, the United States holds itself out as a beacon of democracy. So all of the enemies of the United States, the Russians and the Chinese and the Iranians, so what they do is they constantly identify, right, failures of the United States. So when you had the murder of George Floyd this past summer, who was tweeting about it? The Ayatollah. in Iran, literally. It says, you know, these are the people that moralize to the world, who are always, right, you know, excoriating our human rights violations. Look at these people. They're killing minorities in the streets. And that's not a new, you know, that's not a new element in the playbook. That's what the Soviet Union always did with the United States. That's why the Soviet Union was always mocking the United States' record on civil rights, right? This is the country that wants to teach us about freedom. It's a cynical thing, right? It allows them to say, see, there is no better way. You have to accept our dictatorship, our totalitarianism, our authoritarianism, because there's no other way. That's exactly what Natan Levi is saying to David, Ni eitz ni atztes oyvei Hashem. You've created this terrible chilul Hashem because those who are malevolent, those who are completely cynical about doing the right thing, now they could say, oh yeah, David was David was the one who, you know, used to give those great drashos about a life of virtue, and shifti veis Hashem kol yimei chayai v'shapti veis Hashem l'orech yamim. And this is how he conducts himself. And to make a mockery of the entire thing. It's terrible. Gam haben hayilod l'cha amos yamos. And the offspring, the issue of your illicit relationship with Bathsheba, will not be viable. And immediately, clearly as a stira bepanim, clearly as a slap in the face of David, vayilach nasan el beso, when Nasan HaNavi goes back home, right? He's not willing to talk to David anymore. Just, it harkens back to the image of Shmuel turning and leaving Shaul after the sin of Amalek. And at that moment, Vayigov Hashem Esayelet Asher Yalda, she's not called Bathsheba, but Eshes Uriel David Vayanash. In modern Hebrew, that word Matzav Anush means in a critical condition. So the child becomes, the child was born healthy, but becomes gravely ill. And David beseeches God for the sake of the child. Vayivakesh David es ha'elokim ba'ad hanar. Vayatzom David so muvav elan v'shachav arza. And David HaMelech lies on the floor and he's fasting. Right? Not for his own sake. He doesn't think that he deserves it, but why should the innocent child suffer? Vayakum muzik neveso alav v'akimo min ha'aretz. He's the king. He shouldn't be on the ground. Velo ava, but he wouldn't get up. Velo vara itam lacham, he wouldn't even eat a morsel of bread. Vayhi bayom hashvi, it's a little ambiguous, either the seventh day of the child's life or the seventh day from when the child became ill. Vayhi bayom hashvi, vayamos hayaled, the child dies. Vayiru avdei David lahagidlo, and David's aides were afraid to tell him that the child had died, ki meis hayaled, ki amru. They said the following. When the child was alive, David HaMelech was at his wit's end. What will happen now that the child has died? The Mefarshim will point out what we can understand perfectly for ourselves. They're afraid that David is going to harm himself. He's going to harm himself. So David begins to get the sense that the aides are afraid to tell him. Vayar David ki avadav mislach Hashem. He sees that his aides are sort of whispering. Vayaven David ki meis hayalad. And he instinctively understands that they're afraid to tell him that the child has passed away. And so David says to them, Vayomer David al avadav, hameis hayalad. Vayomer meis. And they affirm, which David already suspected, namely the child had passed. And surprisingly, from their point of view, Vayakum David meha'aretz vayirchatz vayasech vayichalev simlosav. This is a very important pasuk. The Rambam bases his perspective on aninos, on this pasuk, that an onen is allowed to be rochetz and sach and can wash himself. These things are not permissible to somebody who's in mourning, but the child hadn't been buried yet, or according to other views, maybe there was no avelus because this child was never really viable. It's an interesting debate about how to understand what exactly is going on here. Vayavo beis Hashem vayishtachu. And David comes to the shul in his own palace. Vayavo beis Hashem vayishtachu. And he says, bows to the ground. And then he comes back home. And he breaks his fast of multiple days. What's this moment of Vayavo Beis Hashem Vayishtachu? He doesn't say anything. How would you characterize, from a theological point of view, what David HaMelech is doing here? Vayavo Beis Hashem Vayishtachu. He bows to the ground. What is this?
Acceptance?
Yeah. There's no question, Effie. What we call Siduk Hadin. Chayav Adam Levarech Al Ara, Kishem Shem Levarech Al Atova, Lekavlenu B'Simcha. David here is affirming the will of God. This is what Jewish practice is. Hatzur Tamim Paolo, Kichod Rachav Mishpat, Kelam Muna Ve'inavil Tzadik V'Yasharhu. So we recite Tzedek Hadin. And he does it silently, without saying a word. I mean, we hear the echoes here of Vayidom Aharon. So David is accepting God's will that justice has been done. This is an extension of what we spoke about last week, of Chatasi Lashem. That if these are the consequences, so then, these are the consequences. So now the aides are so taken with David's behavior. It just seems so strange to them. They would think that he was literally about to harm himself, and now he goes to God's house, he bows down, he's beginning to, again, behave more normally in terms of, you know, bodily functions. He's eating, right? He gets dressed properly. So, Vayom Rabadav Elav Mahadavar Zasher Asisa. Bavor Yelad Chai Tzamta Vatev Kvechasher Mesa Yelad Kamta Vatoch Alocha. When the child was alive, you were beside yourself. Now the child is dead, and all of a sudden you're eating. So David said, don't you understand? Vayomer ba'ora yalar chai tzamti ve'evke ki amarti mi yodeya. V'chanani Hashem v'chai ha'yalar. Who knows? Where there's life, there's hope. V'chanani Hashem, the language of chanun, chain, Chazal always explained, means from chinam. Not because I deserved it, but it's a matanas chinam. Grace. That God will allow me to have something that I don't deserve, that this child should live. V'atameis, but in God's justice, as difficult as it is to accept, and David did accept it, V'atameis, now that the child has died, what's the point of fasting? Lama za'anitzam, ha'uchal la'shiva? Can I bring my child back? Ha'uchal la'shiva od? Ani holech elav? V'hu? Lo Yashuv Eli. I constantly walk towards him, but he will not return to me. And he holich elav, vehu lo Yashuv Eli. I can't bring him back. As long as that child, kol od nishmato vo, breathed of life, there was hope. The Gemara Masachta Brachos quotes the story of Chizkiyahu HaMelech, who says, Mekublani ani mi beis avi abba. I have a tradition going back, I think, to David HaMelech is what he had in mind. Afilu cherev chada munachas al tzavaro shel adam al yimana atzma min arachamim. Even if a person is about to be executed, the sword is on the neck, a person should daven. Kol od nishmato ba. As long as there's life, there's hope. So David HaMelech was expressing that sentiment. And now the narrative turns dramatically. Vayinachem David, she's no longer Eshes Uriah's Batsheva Ishto. So he turns his attention outward. She's also sustained not just the loss of this child, but the loss of her family. And David, now again, for the first time, she's no longer just sort of a figure in David HaMelech's sin, but she's granted her own persona. Vayinachem David es Batsheva ishto. Vayavoyla vayishkav ima vatele bein. And they have a child together. Vatikra shemo Shlomo. And she calls this child, basically, Shalom, peace. You can see what she wished for after suffering so much loss and upheaval. V'Hashem ohevo, and God had a special love for this child. V'yishlach b'yad Nasan Anavi, and the message was sent from Nasan Anavi. It's a little ambiguous who called the child this other name. V'yikra, either David or Nasan Anavi, v'yikra Shemo Yedidya, that Shlomo had an alternative name, Yedidya, literally the one who is beloved to Hashem, Yedid Hashem, Ba'avur Hashem. Now, the only time we have this expression in the entire Torah is, anybody remember, Yedid Hashem? This is an allusion to Shlomo's destiny. I see Daniel making a thinking face. When's the only time that we have that expression in the Chumash? Yedid Hashem.
And it's also bracha, right?
Good.
Yeah.
Who's bracha?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. How faithful love. How's that go? You've been Yamin Amor, Yedid Hashem.
You hit the nail on the head. Levin Yamin Amar. Yedid Hashem. Yishkon Aveta Chalav. Chofeif Alav Kalayom. Uvein Ksefav Shachem. So, what is that bracha saying? That Hashem tells Binyamin. Yedid Hashem, Yishkol Navet HaChalav, that Hashem is going to put the Beis HaMikdash basically in the Nachala of Binyamin. There's a little bit of a strip where the Beis Kadshei Kadashim is actually in the tribal area of Yehuda. The Gemara describes it, but basically the Beis HaMikdash is at the southern boundary of the Nachala of Binyamin. Why? Because he's Yedid Hashem. So Yedid Hashem, right, is obviously the one who's going to build the Beis HaMikdash. So the Abravanel comments, the Abravanel, who again has taken the most critical reading of David HaMelech, he was guilty of Arayos and Shrichos Damim and many other sins. But the Abravanel says we have to give credit where it's due. V'yoser nachon etzli shenemar sharay la'adam shi'ana adorish v'na'a mekayim. A person should be consistent. V'davara Umarhu me'od. It's a terrible thing. She'adam yechta b'davar mar belochiach alav alacherim. Somebody who sins in an area that he should give other people criticism about that area. That is a davar ra umar. It is an evil and bitter matter. V'lachein amar nasan al David Hashem hevir eschatas chashlo tamus. Efes, however, rotzalom marim heyos Sheniyetz niyatzta v'hayisa b'yamim harishonim mochiach b'shar mecharif megadif menoyetz es oyve Hashem v'fi sheyikchu neshe re'em. This was a topic that David HaMelech spoke about openly. People who were involved in this kind of terrible behavior of taking other people's wives, destroying families. Heim anashim aposhim osim chadom eladav razer asher ata osa. L'chein, Amar lo hanavi, mata ha'isa minayitz, mecharif acherim, v'kario sanoi v'Hashem. If you were so critical of these people, l'fisha yikchu n'shei re'ayim, v'yishkivu osam, because of their destroying other people's families, o li'osam shov chedamim, or you were so critical of people who were murderous, ha'yaroi sh'yimischo ha'el yizbarach, al ha'yoscha nichshal b'davar hu'atzmo, you would have deserved an even worse fate than you got. Hashem should really, by all rights, destroy you, David, now. Asher niyatzta sacherim alav. V'im kolza rachem alecha v'hevir eschat ascha shalo tamos. But because, David, you owned up to your sin, so Hashem is going to forgive you, even though, by all rights, you would have deserved an even worse fate. Okay. So, the last part of the 12th chapter is a little bit of an interlude in the text. And it relates to the war that is ongoing, right? That part of the story has not come to its conclusion. Yoav is fighting with the Jewish army in Ammon. And that is how Uriah was killed. He was sent to the front lines. And we have mentioned now on any number of occasions the position of the Malbim, that the sin of David and Bathsheba really began by David not being out with the people in battle. And we've spoken about that in terms of self-betrayal, of David not living up to his own standards, which we just read in the Abravanel, falling short of his own standards. And David, the one who had run as a young person out to confront Goliath, right, out to confront Goliath, even before he was of military age, and now David is hiding out in his palace and he's having a good time. The Jewish people are at war. So that part of the story is going to be addressed, and I'd also like to deal with another element here. Vayilacham Yoav. Yoav was very busy fighting this grueling siege campaign in Ammon. Birabas b'nei Ammon. Vayilkod et Irham Lucha. Anybody know which modern-day country Ammon is in? Ammon is a tribal area of one of Lot's children, Moab and Ammon. Anyone know? You could, even if all you know is the word Ammon, you could figure it out. Maybe some of you have been there. Right, modern-day Jordan. Capital is Amman.
Amman, yeah.
Have you been, Danny?
Have I been there?
Yeah.
No.
Me neither. So Yoav was busy fighting there. And he's able to capture the capital city. Vayishlach Yoav malachim el David. And he sends messengers. Okay, a little bit of ancient military strategy here. So he refers to conquering the city of the water. So previously we said the Ir HaMalucha. Why is he calling it now the Ir HaMayim? Anybody want to guess? City of the water. You have to sort of put yourself in the shoes of an ancient Near Eastern monarch.
Water is very important. And don't have water, you can't...
Right.
Yeah.
Yes, I think what Effie and Danny are saying together is that it is exactly right. In other words, that all kings prepared themselves to have to make a last stand. So what they would do is they would have a water source right in there, literally running into their palace.
Yeah, when I walked through here, David, last winter, that's what they were showing us.
See, I don't even need to go on the tour. I mean, I wish I was there with you, but, you know, that's exactly right. So the Ir HaMayim is the Ir HaMelucha. They would always keep a water source so that they could hold out in the siege warfare scenario. And they did for 6 months. So this is an interesting moment. So Yoav sends messengers to David. V'yata sofes yeser ha'am. So he says to him, here's my advice. This battle is going to be over really soon. I've already captured the water source. I can just basically starve them out at this point. V'chane al ha'ir v'lachda. Because any day now, they're going to either surrender or capitulate or just be defeated. Vilachda pen elkod ani es ha'ir v'nikra shemi aleha. So Yoav does something that requires us to think a little bit. Nothing wrong with thinking. So Yoav says to David, get here quickly with the army, because otherwise I will come home from this battle with all the glory. V'nikra shemi aleha. They'll call this city the city of Yoav. Has Yoav been so loyal to David in the past? Killing Abner? Let's flag that issue. Vayesov David as kol ha'am. So this is a little bit of tshuva in its own right. David leaves the palace. Vayilech rabasa. So he goes to the field of battle, vayilachem ba vayilkada, and he, you know, gives the final blow, vayikach hasateres malkam, me'al rosho, and he takes the very crown of the king, of Amon, umishkalaki karzahave, evan yikarav, atial rosh David, and David intermittently would wear this very heavy crown, ushlal ha'ir hotzi harbe ma'od, and David brutally executes the people of Amon, ve'asam asher ba hotzi vayasem ba megeirah, Uvacharitze habarzel, these are different kinds of metal implements. Uvamagzeros habarzel, vehavirosam bamalbein, which is literally to pass them through a furnace. The Mefarshim are split on what exactly this means. Were they, sort of forced to do slave labor? Was it even, more graphic than that? V'chein yaseh l'chol harei b'nei Amon, v'yashuv David v'chol ha'am Yerushalayim. David makes, he handles the victims of this war brutally. So, a couple of important points. So, first of all, in terms of the critique that the sin really started when David did not lead the Jewish people into battle, so David clearly is, I think, trying to make up for that. There's a kind of a compensation here at the end, one. Two, I just want to suggest, very tentatively, I haven't seen this in any of the classical authorities, but that David really takes out an unusual wrath on the people of Ammon, which you can understand if you think about it from, I guess, a bit of a psychological perspective, that this was a place where David had sinned in a grievous way. And David feels that this battle has really compromised him. So David may be releasing some of that that rage that he must feel in terms of how he's failed himself. I wonder to what extent if that's being directed outwards. The point that I think is really the most interesting is to think about what Yoav was doing. Remember, Yoav is the only one who knows. He's the only one. He is the only one who saw those orders that Uriah should be killed. He would be the only one who would be able to figure out. He might not know all of the details. He might know Bathsheba was pregnant. But he's the only one that would be able, from this point on, to know what David had done. So what do you think? I think Yoav is signaling to David here when he says, I'm about to conquer the city, right? I'm going to get the glory. My name will be on the city. So come quickly with the nation. What's the message to David here? Is it about really the conquest of the city? Is it about something else?
Loyalty.
Yeah, so Effie, I think it's a subtle point, but when you say loyalty, what do you mean? That Yoav is basically...
He's subservient to David. That he, he's not going to turn the tables on him or anything.
Yeah, I think that's right, Effie. I think you're correct. I think basically what he's saying is that your secret is safe with me.
I thought maybe he was giving him a chance to, redeem himself and be that military figure that he was before, that he failed to be before, and he's kind of, giving him a chance to snap out of it.
Possibly that, too. I think David does achieve a measure of tshuva here. But there's no doubt that Yoav has signaled to David that, okay, I know. But I'll be the keeper of this secret. Now, going forward, this is going to be very important. Because if you're David now, if before, when Yoav killed Avner, David felt that he could not move on Yoav. Said, I'm rach, I'm a na'ar, I'm too. So at this point, think it's even more complicated. Yoav uniquely understands what David has done. We have the benefit, obviously, of knowing how the story ends. One of the last things David ever says in his life is he says to Shlomo, interestingly, Yoav has blood on his hands, and you have to address that. I could not address that. Well, why couldn't David address that? I think this is part of it. I think there was an understanding that David had that to bring Yoav his just deserts as somebody who had shed innocent blood would have been less than consistent, to say the least. Shlomo, on the other hand, does not have that issue. So I think that Yoav is doing something very subtle here. And I think that's important. I think that's very important. And it'll explain a lot about the relationship. Now, Ruth, in terms of your point that he's also giving David a chance to rehabilitate himself, there's no doubt. And to assume his proper role at the head of the nation. We'll see even more of that in the rebellion of Absalom, and David is really incapable of functioning properly as the king. But I think this is a very important dimension of it as well, is that the sin of Bathsheba is not an entirely closed matter. It would appear to be a closed matter with the birth of Shlomo, Yedid Hashem, Vayinachem David es Bathsheba ishto. They've moved on. There's healing. And maybe all the I's are dotted and maybe all of the T's are crossed, except one, which is what Yoav knows. So David has already suffered, where we stand now, the first consequence, which is the death of the son. There's Nechama because there's another child. And that child we've already seen in allusion to the fact, he's Yedid Hashem, he's the one who's going to be Yishkom Levetach Alav. He's the one who's going to build the Beit HaMikdash. That's important. But all of the developments that we'll begin looking at next week, chapter 13, so they will bring to fruition the terrible prophecy of Natan HaNavi, that the chair of the sword will never leave the house of David, and his house will be destroyed, eroded from within. Now, David HaMelech has just sort of begun to reap the whirlwind of this terrible sin that he committed, this multi-layered sin that he committed with Bathsheba and with Uriah. And so again, we have to keep our eye on the Yoav issue, and we have to keep our eye on how the subsequent events will be a terrifying lesson in divine justice. To conclude with, I think, the most significant point characterologically for David, the same David who we spoke about last week, saying Chatasi LaHashem, wordlessly, after the child dies, we saw Vayavo Beis Hashem, that David simply goes wherever the Beis Hashem was in proximity to his palace, Vayishtachu, and he bows down there, clearly accepting divine justice. David is not at any point going to say, I don't deserve this. Not now. Not in the story of Amnon and Tamar that will begin next week. Not in the story of Avshalom. He never says, why is this happening to me? He never says, Lama ze anochi. He's very clear on why this is happening. And he accepts that. He accepts that responsibility. Tzedek HaDin. Okay. So we'll hold it up there. And God willing, next week we're going to continue on with the story, fascinating but tragic story, of Amnon and Tamar. How that, of course, sets the stage for the rebellion of Avshalom. Everybody have a wonderful night.
Good night.
Good night, everybody. Good night, Charlotte.
Michael. Thank you, Rabbi. Thank you.